Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hi folks, Coach here. I'm dropping into your feed today to let you know that Material Girls is on spring break. Because we're out of office, we decided to unlock an episode of Making Worlds, Hannah McGregor's new video podcast about imagining otherwise. In this show, Hannah speaks with guests about the liberatory possibilities of sci-fi and fantasy. This video podcast is usually only available on our Patreon, so tune in, enjoy, and hop on over to patreon.com/ohwitchplease if you want more.
Hello and welcome to Making Worlds, a video podcast about imagining otherwise. I'm Hannah McGregor, and on this show, I'm going to talk to cool, fun, sexy, interesting people about fantasy and sci-fi and speculative fiction and all of the other kinds of genres that let us imagine other possibilities for how the world could be. You might know me from Witch Please or Material Girls, or maybe you've been hiding in my closet this whole time. In case you don't know me, I am a podcaster and a writer and a professor and kind of like a weird feral little goblin, or maybe like a raccoon that a witch turned into a human, but I still like wash my food every day using my tiny little hands. And one of my favorite things to do, in addition to like washing my food using my tiny little hands and like breaking into people's apartments to eat their bread, is talking to cool people about media that really matters to them. For this episode, my guests are two of my dearest friends, Lucia Lorenzi and Claire Mulcahy, and they are joining me to talk about Dimension 20. Let me just read their bios to you real quick. So Lucia Lorenzi, pronouns she and they, studies Canadian literature and trauma theory with a particular interest in silence, testimony, and narrative communities. Much of her previous scholarship has included academic Twitter shitposting and ranting. Lucia remains institutionally unaffiliated, but considers themselves deeply connected to communities of practice and thought. Claire Mulcahy, pronouns she, her, is a professor at NAIT, the Northern Alberta Institute of Technology, who teaches topics like research, ethics, and critical thinking. She has a PhD in English, but we don't hold it against her, and she's particularly interested in the intersections of race, gender, and sexuality in pop culture. For those of you who are unfamiliar, Dimension 20 is an extremely popular live play Dungeons and Dragons web series that uses a kind of anthology model to introduce you to lots of different seasons and lots of different fantasy and sci-fi worlds. It's hosted and DM'd, that's dungeon mastered for those of you who aren't D&D nerds, by Brennan Lee Mulligan. And it's produced by Dropout TV, formerly known as College Humor. Today, Lucia and Claire and I are going to be talking about the intimacy of collaborative world building and the magical possibilities of making stories together, and also what parts of Dimension 20 we think are the gayest. Hi, Claire.
Hi, Hannah.
Hi, Lucia.
Hi, Hannah.
It's really exciting to talk to both of you today. Can we start off by having the two of you tell me, and by extension, anyone who happens to be watching this video right now, what text we are going to be talking about today?
Lucia, do you want to start?
Sure. Hello, one and all. We're going to be talking about Dimension 20.
Sorry, I needed a sound effect.
Yes.
Lucia, what's Dimension 20?
Dimension 20 is an actual play, mostly Dungeons & Dragons, 5e, but sometimes other game systems, that is run by the Dropout, formerly College Humor, folks. And that's a kind of it. It's a shenanigans.
Claire, will you say a little bit about the relationship between Dimension 20 and the three of us?
Yeah, I sure will. So we started watching, I started watching Dimension 20 because Hannah dragged me into it with repeated clips from the show until I gave in. And then we slowly began doing, during the pandemic, a long distance viewing group where we watch things as a synchronized team that grew and grew, most of whom are in the West Coast. And now we have a whole world where we have nicknames for each other. We're cousins. We call each other cousins. And I'm the Countdown Daddy because it's my job to synchronize the shows and countdown. It's very important.
It's extremely important. If Countdown Daddy isn't there, the rest of us don't know what to do with ourselves.
What are you going
to
do? Yeah, I mean, it's mostly that I have ADHD and I'm constantly impatient to get started watching. So someone has to do it.
And Lucia, do you remember the timeline of how you got into Dimension 20 was about the same thing?
I was nodding along while Claire was talking about, yeah, and then Hannah just kind of dragged me into it, and I was coerced into this fandom. Like most things, if somebody's like, hey, do you want to get into this thing? I am a real joiner. So as long as somebody keeps pestering me to get into a thing, I will happily get into it.
Hannah's very good at pestering.
Hannah's very good at pestering. So I had previously started watching another D&D actual play show called Critical Role on Hannah's recommendation. And then Hannah was like, hey, do you want to watch something else? It's real funny. And that's how I also started watching D20, because Hannah was like, clips. You want to see some clips? Here's some more clips.
Yeah, that, but leave out the part where I ask you if you want to see them.
Here are some clips. Yeah.
Yeah. Hannah's. It was basically just, I'm not going to say the word syllabus, because I know Hannah will have a real time with that. It was a carefully curated reading list. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Lizzie understands that I get mad when people call a reading list a syllabus, because a syllabus, by definition, has to have, assignments and a pedagogical structure.
Oh. Oh, honey, is this a thing that you're having fights about?
No, Lucia would never fight me on that. They don't care.
Okay. Nope. That's good. That's the right approach. Yes, Hannah sent me a video where she said, this is the last thing that I'm going to send you, and if this doesn't convince you, then nothing will. And it was of a character on the show called Jawbone, who is a beloved werewolf guidance counselor, telling a student who was having a panic attack that that panic attacks weren't a character flaw, and that, you know, that she just has an illness that isn't being treated. And that tapped into my deep, dark trauma, and here we are. It was very persuasive.
Trauma. It'll hook you in every time.
So let's talk a little bit more. Let's draw back from that particular moment to just talk a little bit more about, what is Dimension 20 like, and why do you like it?
So Dimension 20 is kind of part of a larger genre that's become more and more popular these days. So Critical Role, one that Lucia mentioned earlier, is massive. It's become this sort of multimedia property. It started out with, friends playing D&D together, and now it's an animated show and a massive Twitch, property. And so D20 is sort of one amongst that genre that's become sort of more mainstream. But one of the things that I really appreciate about it is that it operates in kind of an anthology model. So every season is you know, most seasons, there's a couple of sequels, there's a couple of spinoffs, but for the most part, every season takes place with a new character, new characters, new world, new storytelling, often a new sort of subgenre or like tropes that they're wanting to explore. And so it becomes this thing where, you know, you really come to love this cast that plays in all these different worlds. But so you get this wonderful kind of consistency in the cast. And if you're like me, grow a deeply parasocial relationship with the cast. But then you get this also like constant creativity and innovation in the new seasons.
Yeah. And less of a kind of like gatekeepy lore burden, so to speak, which is a characteristic of a lot of nerd culture that keeps people out, is the sense that like, oh, I can't watch the new Marvel movie unless I've watched the last 25 Marvel movies, or I can't just start reading the X-Men comics unless I go back and read, you know, 35 previous years of X-Men comics. And that, you know, and sometimes we do. Sometimes we just say, okay, I'll do my homework. But sometimes it feels like such a cost to pay to just try to get into something.
Yeah. For sure. And a lot of, for people who haven't watched a D20 season, a lot of the seasons cap out at about 17, like I think a full season is about 17 episodes. So, and a shorter season, so some of the side quests or seasons are maybe as short as 4, and sometimes maybe around 10. So, and the episodes themselves are about 2.5 hours long. So even in terms of the time that you have to put in to jump into a little bit and get a taste of what you want, it's really not as burdensome as trying to jump into a campaign that's been happening for maybe 1 or 2 or 4 years. So I find that in that way, it's a little bit more accessible. I think as Claire said, there's a little bit genre wise, if you want to, the murder mystery or the high seas adventure, or lately there's been a little bit more horror. So there is a little bit more sort of accessibility, and the anthology, I think that's a great word that Claire mentioned, that people can jump in and kind of get a bit of a taste. And what I've noticed on Reddit, because I'm always on Reddit reading what people have to say, is that some people are like, you know what, this season, not for me, see you in 3 months. I'll see what's up next. And that's totally fine and very acceptable within the community, that people are like, oh, I'm not really a horror person, I don't like to be scared. And that's totally cool.
And I think I don't know, there's something interesting about like not building a world where the lore is so intensive and so necessary to know before audiences can come in, because it feels like that makes room more for storytelling and characters, which are the things that I'm really excited about. You know, I'm a high fantasy nerd, but not to the extent that folks who, you know, obsess over things like Critical Role are. You know, I don't want to memorize a bunch of made up, you know, languages. And so there's something for me more, I don't know, more appealing or more engaging about, and definitely less gatekeeping about building these worlds where you don't have to follow a ton of lore.
Yeah. Now, I feel like talking about the parasocial relationships, that thinking about a series like this that is an anthology series where every season is new characters, a new setting, a new world. Can you talk about how that complicates the parasocial relationship with the players? Because a huge part of the pleasure of our collective watching experience is our collective parasocial fondness for this cast of improvisers who we've watched do things like transition genders over the years that we have been watching these series. Like, you know, there's all of that intensive parasocial connection that is characteristic of like web series and podcasts. Is that undermined by the fact that they're not playing the same characters? Is it enhanced by it? Like, how do you think that plays into it?
I mean, I think for me, it's this real joy of getting to see them as actors, as improvisers, like the parasocial joy of getting to see them play in the sandbox that is improvisation that is storytelling and that is play. Like, for instance, the improviser and actor that we're talking about, Ali Beardsley, when they first started on Dimension 20, Fantasy High, so the first series that they were on, that was their first time playing D&D. And so it is very, very interesting to see them go from someone who had never played the game before to very experienced D&D player, because that is one of their jobs. Right. So part of the sort of parasocial joy is being like, oh, wow, I wish this was my job, but also getting to see them learn the game. And also, as somebody who is not a very experienced game player myself, getting to kind of vicariously experience that like new energy of like, yeah, I don't know what I'm doing either. So yeah, I think there is that, like, sandbox is probably like the best term that I have for like getting to see the players dip in and out of different roles, and also to see them get the joy of coming back to a sequel like a few years later and be like, wow, what an interesting time to come back to a character after a couple years away. So I think that's part of the parasocial just delight, I think, for me, to be able to revisit things, and not in this nostalgia kind of way with the reboots that we're seeing a lot in pop culture right now, but actually getting to revisit a world in where you see that people have matured in their gameplay and they've done that because they've been in all of these other worlds.
Yeah, I think like one of the reasons why I got so attached to watching actual play in the first place was, you know, during the being really lonely during the pandemic and the kind of watching people's relationships. And I think, you know, you watch the same cast and you get to see all the like little inside jokes, or they're, you know, being physically affectionate, or, you know, so for me, I think there's always the two layers of multiple layers of parasocial stuff, where I like getting to see the same cast just be friends. It's really lovely. You know, there's not that many shows that I think depict adult friendship, and it's really nice to see like a just, you know, adult friendships develop over the years. I'm always curious about when they play different characters, if that changes their relationships with each other, you know, if they're playing siblings or cousins, or, you know, exes, cousins. Or cousins. Like, I think, because there's such a kind of liminal space between, like, you know, there is a performance that is happening, but at the same time, there is like genuine, you know, you can see that there's genuine emotion that they're feeling in these role playing, and like genuine, you know, so for example, in one season where some of the cast members played, one cast member named Lou played the father of two of the other cast members, and they talked about how much they wanted to make their dad proud and like how much he wanted to protect them. And, you know, there's just like the like play with identity that is possible is so interesting.
Yeah. And gender, like relationship play, as well as gender play, as you know, all of these ways that you can see the cast of like artists who you get to know and admire and, you know, enjoy watching them get better at this thing that they're doing, or just get to enjoy watching them like be really good at this thing that they're doing.
Yes.
And then on top of that, the way that you get to see them across different roles, and the funny way that when you're watching live play, it moves very organically back and forth between immersion in the story and the improvisers themselves, like the players themselves just speaking.
Yeah.
And that creates a really interesting, I'm about to say something.
Discourse?
I'm going to say palimpsest.
Lucia really wanted to say palimpsest. Someone had to do it. It wasn't going to be me.
Someone had to.
But it is, right? It's like this really layered text. And then, you know, I think we have layered on top of that our own viewing process, you know, our own patterns of viewing it together on a particular day of the week that we call Nerd Night. And, you know, calling Claire Countdown Daddy and having the little ritual where we share pictures of our dinner or our snacks or our cats, that then adds this additional layer that makes us collectively feel more connected both to the players and to the roles that they're playing.
Yeah, there's a lot of ritual around the way that we enact those those nights. And I think, you know, there's something so interesting about, there's so many different kind of relationships being formed. There's the relationships between us, there's the relationships between the people on the screen, there's the relationships between, you know, the characters that they're playing. And so for me, I think that's always, again, that's, I think, why I come back. Something that's something that I love about this genre. And it's made, it's kind of spoiled other literature or other forms of pop culture for me, because, you know, I tried to, even watching like sketch comedy, I missed what Hannah was talking about, the sort of like moving from serious or silly role play into, you know, friends making each other laugh or talking about, you know, what they're going to eat for lunch. Or there's, it's a very specific combination that's hard to get anywhere else, really.
There is this really ritualized moment in D20 of sort of coming into the world, right? So, you know, Brennan Lee Mulligan, who's the DM, will say like, hello, one and all. And he'll have this little spiel of like setting the scene of like welcoming people into the world and saying like, say, you know, say hello, intrepid heroes. Like there is this very sort of like bringing people into the world. And it is actually really highly ritualized as to become like these taglines and sort of bringing people out of the world and saying like, okay, like it's, you can go kind of back to your lives now. And then obviously there is the debrief show afterwards called Adventuring Party, where people talk about what, you know, the cast members talk about what happened in the episode. So that also provides an opportunity for people to, for the cast members themselves, as well as viewers, to kind of say, okay, whew, what went on in that episode, especially if it was a particularly difficult one. And in other shows too, there are these, yeah, very highly ritualized, like in Critical Role, people will say like, oh, is it Thursday yet? That's the tagline. And I think that provides a little bit of a, I don't know, a sort of a container to say like, this is the world where you get to, whether you're watching it live on the day that it premieres, or, you know, where you're watching it the day after it premieres, as we always do on Thursdays, where you get to step into this world that we are making for a little bit. And you get to know when that world kind of starts and ends for the bit of time that you're going to be in it. And so I think I like that very highly ritualized container holding.
All right. So in this segment, we talk about what the text we are discussing has taught us about living in the world or imagining the world otherwise. So beyond just really liking Dimension 20 and finding it very comforting and funny and sweet and all of these things we love about it, what about it lets you imagine the world otherwise? What's the sort of radical potential in this for you?
I just think that there's something, the uncanny, I guess it's an uncanniness about Dimension 20 and about actual play and TTRPG shows, where you can mash together a complete fantasy and complete, not just high fantasy where it's like elves and dragons, but complete ridiculousness against the sort of political constructs and things that touch a little bit too close to home. And the only way that it's comfortable at times to explore that is by having it alongside things that are completely ridiculous. So in Dimension 20, one of the anthology pieces that stands out to me is A Crown of Candy, which is a sort of Game of Thrones, really, really, really rough exploration of like feudal values and really horrendous.
And like the violence of religion.
The violence of religion, the violence of like kings and queens and all of that rule. But the characters are all made out of candy and food.
It's Game of Thrones set in Candyland.
The only way that like certain character deaths and like actions are bearable is because it's gummy bear people. And like the only way that certain betrayals are bearable is because it's chocolate people.
Brennan ends one of his villains monologue by saying, and this is a piece of cake. And then that piece of cake stabs another character.
Like it's only bearable because of that. It's only fundamentally bearable because of that. Or getting to explore like the vicissitudes of corporate America through the ridiculousness of the underbelly of a magical world in New York.
Yeah, yeah, the fantastical tropes take things that are real and urgent and pressing and sets them slightly at a distance so that we can like look at them and think about them and talk about them, but not feel just totally crushed by them. Because that is a thing about Dimension 20, is that the players joke that like in Brennan's stories, the bad guy is always capitalism or the church. But like they are explicitly anti-capitalist, anti-imperialist, anti-oppressive narratives that are using their different worlds that they jump into always to think about and critique power.
And then you're not alone in doing it because you are adventuring with other people. You cannot do it by yourself, which is a reassurance and also kind of terrifying.
And like mechanically part of how it works, because it's a game that you have to play together. So like you literally are watching people face a bad guy that is just literally capitalism come to life. And it's like, this mechanically doesn't work unless you collaborate.
Yeah. I think that is part of what I love about it, because I watch, you know, I have English degrees. I've read a lot of depressing books over the years. And I
listen, a shameful secret about the three of us is that we all have PhDs in literature.
It's so embarrassing. Don't tell anyone. But I think especially during the pandemic, I had reached a point in my life where I was like, I can't absorb, you know, hard things anymore. And even now I still feel like my quota or my like threshold for really intense material is lowered post pandemic. But I also want art that feels like it's saying something interesting and like speaking about the things that I care about. And so, yeah, I think like I hadn't thought about it that way, but I think Dimension 20 is kind of a perfect combination of like, it is all the issues that I really care about. You know, it is talking about things like justice and equity and, you know, systemic oppression, but it's doing things through like a gummy bear. So there's always that sort of the balance that they're walking between, you know, not making it so traumatic that you check out or that they lose the audience. But at the same time, they're never shortchanging those storylines. You know, like they always follow through to the end. The climactic, you know, finale always resolves kind of the storyline in some way. So they're also not shying away from any of those storylines either.
You know, I've heard a lot of the cast talk in other contexts about storytelling and about this kind of collaborative improvisational storytelling that they're engaged in, and how huge trust is in this space, and that you can go to harder places, you can push to more intense scenes, you can grapple with more difficult themes, the more you trust each other, and that you can see as you watch the series, even though it is moving across these different worlds, you can see how as these players get to know each other better and better and get more and more able to trust each other, what they're able and willing to do in the storytelling space also becomes more complex and more risky. And I think we also see that in the way that sort of the larger collaborative world of Dimension 20 is also building out. Can you guys talk a little bit about that? Like how we've seen it go from like a real bare bones production to something like much more collaborative?
Yeah, so Dimension 20, unlike, you know, so comparing it to something like Critical Role, when Critical Role started, it was a lot of or early days, it was doing live streaming a lot of the time. It became, that's sort of how it captured its audience. Critical Role has almost entirely been, you know, filmed and then heavily edited. And in the early days, some of that editing now seems pretty hokey. You know, they would have sort of cheap sound effects. They would have, you know, Brennan doing voices, sort of doing After Effects that sound like After Effects. And then College Humor, the sort of the production company, the owner company, went out of business and they had to really scale down their production even further. So it's been amazing in recent years to see those production values go up again. So we've started having things like, you know, actual physical minis and maps and really like lovely set design and art design. They've started getting in new GMs, new game GMs/DMs who get to do some of the side quests.
game masters / dungeon masters.
Thank you. Lucia, do you want to add to any of that?
Yeah, I think you're right. I mean, some of it is that is really about like the sort of the material costs of doing it, right? Like you're building trust with a small group of people because that's who you have to play with, because that's who you can afford to hang out with in an industrial park at 3 a.m., which is an inside joke because that's what they're filming with, right? But I think the D&D community of these people who are playing, it's kind of a small insular community in some ways, like people who are doing this professionally and trying to make it professionally. The improv world is also a small community of people who are doing this kind of professionally or semi-professionally and know each other. And I think seeing people who are taking these kinds of risks together in these spaces, building characters who are not necessarily likable. A lot of the characters that that have been built in the early campaigns are not like they're not anti-heroes, but they sort of are in a way. Like they're not perfect people by any means, and they have to also like go through processes of kind of saving each other and saving themselves, and not in a trite like YA movie kind of way at all. And I think that's what's interesting about the sequel to some of the series as well, is that you can kind of be like, well, I don't know what's going to happen to these characters. Is there going to be a sequel? Are they going to resolve some of their, daddy issues or whatever? Like, I don't know. And I think that's what's lovely about the trust of also leaving some threads available for people to pick up in the future. And I think that's what also makes it possible for other people within the larger gaming community to say like, okay, let's actually collaborate together. And then now we've seen a lot of different people come in and you have these, the smaller side quests and guests come in. And it's really, really wonderful to see. Trust is a key principle for how things get done in the Dimension 20 community. And that also goes towards like being like, let's put the spotlight where it deserves. Like, let's talk about who built the sets, who built the minis, who did the sound design, who did the lighting design, and so that it becomes a truly collaborative process. Brennan is very, it's not even just a humbleness, it's an actual like, this didn't just get done out of my godhead. This world is actually fundamentally unable to be done by me alone. So
yeah, and celebrating that, like really, really celebrating that. And again, like the sort of model of art making that is about saying like, I'm going to offer you something up and I'm also going to hand it over to you and let you pick it up and put your own spin on it, which is vulnerable when you're a creator.
Well, I was thinking about vulnerability a lot because, doing any kind of creative work with people is vulnerable, but I think this is a particularly wild thing to do to people. You're like all coming in, you're collectively pretending, you're trusting that nobody's gonna be cruel about it, or nobody's gonna, like that everyone's going to commit to the level that you're committing, which is like, imagining a battle and being really invested in it. Or, one of the first times that one of the cast members cried during one of the seasons, she got really embarrassed and people were sort of saying, no, this is great. This is like the level of commitment to the artwork that you're sort of showing. And now they're at the point where, they will, they'll cry regularly in seasons, or they'll, console each other after. And that's like you're putting yourself in it is at once a very silly genre in a lot of ways, but it is also like a very raw and vulnerable one that you're putting yourself through.
Yeah, 100%. Can you share just some like favorite, like do you have a favorite campaign, a favorite sort of series within Dimension 20?
I'm going to hand this over to Claire first, because Claire, I know that you want, I know.
I have the one that Lucia is watching right now. So Fantasy High was the first season that they recorded, and it's one of the only ones that they've done sequels or spinoffs for. So Fantasy High season 2, it was kind of a...
I'm just going to pause here and just tell people. So Fantasy High 1, it's a great pun on the concept of high fantasy.
Yeah. I did not realize that for the very long time.
For the longest time, for the long, yeah, same. So fantasy high, but it's like a high fantasy classic D&D adventuring story mashed up with The Breakfast Club.
It's a great combination of things.
It's really wonderful. So they're like teens in a sort of contemporary high school but it's a high school for adventurers, and they're learning how to be D&D adventurers and like go off and like, you know, burn towns and make money.
Yeah. And the second season of Fantasy High was kind of a departure. It was the only season that they did live. They had, you know, it's an interesting season in terms of sort of their attempts at kind of fostering fan culture in a way that they don't often do otherwise, you know, compared to something like Critical Role. Poor Critical Role. I really like Critical Role. It's just, it's a very obvious comparison point because it's one of the other main sort of big beasts. But, you know, shows like Critical Role will have things like ad breaks, or they'll sell a lot of merchandise. Dimension 20 doesn't really, for the most part, sort of within the show advertise or kind of, you know, speak directly to the fans or use fan, you know, use a nickname for the fans or anything like that. So it's like, in a structural way, it's a really interesting season just to see what they were trying to do to create a new form of fandom and a new model for the show. And then in storytelling, it's just, you know, there's a lot of, I think when they first started, again, Fantasy High was the first season that they ever did. And I think they didn't really know.
And it's junior year. So like yes. The characters are also brand new to high school.
Yeah, and I think they didn't totally know.
No, freshman year.
I don't know. American high school American terms.
Who knows? Freshman.
They were in it. University. I don't know. but it was. I think that first season they didn't totally know how good they could be at like role playing and developing characters, and in the second season, you can really see them taking chances, you know, so one character who was just sort of, you know, like an arrogant, rich kid in the first season goes through a whole exploration of his relationship to masculinity and his father and his, class. And then, you know, I'm a sucker for romance, and it has one of the best queer romances in it.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's one of those wonderful queer romances that is, you know, a character is introduced entirely to be a side character, like with no intention to make her be a bigger part of the series. And then one of the player characters like takes not romantic, just a sort of interactive interest in her and enjoys, you know, improvising against this character. And slowly and organically, a dynamic emerges where they end up becoming romantically involved. And it's because it is a genuinely organic discovery on the part of the two players who are improvising. And like, it's a queer relationship, and the player character was not established as queer prior to that. So it was also like the risk that the players are taking in terms of putting out that possibility, not knowing if it will be received, feels equivalent to the experience of being young and queer and like trying to figure out if the person you have a crush on is also maybe into that.
I kiss her and I skateboard away.
I kiss her and I skateboard away. The gayest line ever said.
If I had a skateboard as a teen, I also would have skateboarded away. And for me, there's something like, again, thinking about gender and sexuality play, like the other, you know, the NPC, the non-player character, is played by the Dungeon Master, by Brennan Lee Mulligan. I am not personally super attracted to Brennan. I know that's a contentious statement in this room.
Lucia's got a real thing about his chest hair, but we'll talk about that in a moment.
I didn't even bring it up myself.
We brought it up for you.
As usual.
Tough timer, 17 seconds. Yep.
But I had a real crush on him as a queer, in this case, half Phoenix character who, you know, like it's interesting how the level of imagination and commitment can make you have Like, I didn't have feelings about Brennan. I had feelings about Ida, but it was a very confusing time for me.
Oh my God. I love that. It is a confusing time. Lucia, what's your favorite series?
My favorite series is The Unsleeping City. So for people who haven't watched it, it takes place in this magical version of New York that kind of exists parallel to the real New York and involves a series of characters who are basically trying to, I mean, the big bad is very, ends up being very clearly capitalism.
Yeah, I'm like gentrification.
Gentrification. But what I love about The Unsleeping City is that it takes these characters who are often very seen, often seen in, I'm going to say it like shows like Law and Order. The Law and Order franchise is these stereotypes of New York, and it turns them into real people. And so we have like trans characters, we have a black character, we've got this like lovely like Italian character, we've got like an older woman character. So we've got these characters from all these different walks of life. It deals with substance use in like a really humanized way. All of these characters from very, very different parts of the city that work together, because it's all about like, what is a community and kind of like, what do we owe to each other as parts of a community who like live together? Like an emo kid who's like, I really don't like the big bad that is gentrification. And, you know, like a black nurse who like takes care of his community. And like, what do we actually portray in black masculinity in stories about New York? It's not usually good. And we have that at like front and center. And yet with this like really just gorgeous, like soft fairy tale weaving through of New York. But that's not about like this sort of gritty version of New York that you see in like, yeah, all the propaganda that is Law and Order. So yeah, it's absolutely my favorite.
Well, and that's one of those sort of threads that I think, you know, that the way that they deal with substance abuse, I think is really interesting, because in the first season, two characters in particular, you know, there's sort of mentions of maybe drinking too much, or one of them occasionally sells drugs, and that's part of the sort of plot line. But it's not necessarily until the second season when they really take things like, you know, rehab and sobriety seriously. There's a dice mechanic for, you know, did you get enough stress that you're in risk of losing your sobriety? And they did a bunch of like consultations, you know, to make sure that they were doing that in respectful ways. And it's, you know, another example of this very silly game doing some really like smart and interesting things with the mechanics.
Yeah. And again, that playfulness just sort of inviting you into thinking seriously and compassionately about experiences that might be beyond your own lived experience.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
All right, you two. We end every episode of Making Worlds with a Mad Lib.
Horrifying.
I'm so concerned.
Okay, so we're going to go back and forth. We're going to go Lucia, Claire. I'm just going to ask you for a kind of word. If you can't come up with one, you can phone a friend, by which I mean ask the other person to help you out. Okay, Lucia, you first. A greeting.
Hello.
Claire, an adjective.
Oh no, see, this is where my English degree fails me. Is an adjective the ones that describe nouns? Or verb.
Yes.
Okay. Oh my God. Quickly, is that a thing that describes it a noun, or is that a
That's quick.
Quick. Sure. Quick.
Lucia, a number.
Oh, Lucia got an easy one.
57.
Claire, the title of an 80s movie.
Ferris Bueller's Day Off.
Amazing. Lucia, an adjective.
Beautiful.
Beautiful. Good. Claire, an occupation. Beautiful. Good. Claire, an occupation.
Teacher.
Lucia, this one's going to be hard for you. A celebrity with three names.
Brandon Lee Mulligan?
No.
Jamie Lee Curtis.
Jamie Lee Curtis. Beautiful.
Another Lee.
Claire, brace yourself. It's time for an adjective again.
Oh, God. Why are there so many adjectives?
Kind of how sentences work.
Hot?
Good. Yeah. And Lucia, I need one more greeting from you.
Be gone. That's not a greeting.
All right. Hello, one and all, and welcome to another quick episode of Dimension 57, Ferris Bueller's Day Off. I'm your beautiful dungeon teacher, Jamie Lee Curtis, and with me, as always, are our hot heroes. Say begone, hot heroes.
Begone is my favorite. Begone is such a wild thing to say as a greeting.
I said say it. Say begone.
Begone, hot heroes.
It's the worst greeting because it means goodbye. Not even that, it means go away. I love you both so much. Thanks so much for doing this.
Oh my gosh, I'm so dehydrated now.
Thank you so much, Lucia and Claire. And in the immortal words of your own Mad Lib, begone.
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 Thanks so much, everyone, for joining us for our second episode of Making Worlds. Making Worlds is a Witch Please Productions production, and it's funded entirely by you, our wonderful, sexy, cool, smart, erudite, cosmopolitan, wow, so many adjectives. I'm sorry, I'm actually just showing off that I know what an adjective is, etc. Patreon supporters. None of this would be possible without you. Thank you so much. If you want more content from Witch Please Productions, you can find the rest of our shows at owitchplease.ca, which is also where we put our transcripts and our show notes and some secret Easter eggs that you're just going to have to click through the website to find. You can follow us on Instagram at owitchplease if you want some bonus content. Plus, we have a Substack that comes out twice a month, and it's really fun. There's playlists and food recommendations and sometimes like behind the episode peeks into our flagship show, Material Girls. Special thanks to everyone on the Witch Please Productions team who makes Making Worlds possible. That includes our producer, Zoe Mix, our associate producer and editor, Gabby Iori, our executive producer, Hannah Rehack, aka Coach, and of course, the wonderful Marcel Cosman, co-founder of Witch Please Productions, and definitely not having intense FOMO from the fact that she is also friends with Claire and we didn't invite her to come to this recording. We'll be back next month with a whole new piece of media that lets us imagine otherwise. Until next month, begone.